Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is Friday, May 20th, 2016, and this is Jeff Dunphy coming to you from retooling.org. And this is Retooling for Our Coming of Age. This is episode 12 in our continuing journey into the art and science of self-discovery. And we're going to continue on today on our awareness of and our diligence in extricating ourselves from our identification with our mind. We're going to track how we move through various stages of awareness as we wake up. And this is, after all, the time of waking up, the time of revelation. It's been chatted about in all the holy books, as you can all well imagine. And this time of revelation is not so much a time of somebody else coming to the door and saving us. It's a time when we get and we have the option and opportunity to wake up and effectively save ourselves. And it's starting to recognize that we are not the vessels that we reside in. We chat about in the lamasery, in the school that we have, we chat often about how many bodies we have, and the realm in which we live in is called the septenary realm. We have the solar system we live in, this part of the universe, has lots and lots of sevens in it. And as we learn that we have seven bodies, the physical, the etheric, the astral or emotional, the mental or intellect, the higher mental or the abstract. Now, the intellect we made reference to in past shows is the analytic, and the abstract we've made reference to in past shows is the contemplative. And we have the atomic and the buddhic. These are the seven bodies. Now, Dwalkul was known to say many years ago that as soon as you realize that you are the dweller in these vessels, the dweller in these bodies, much will be given you. And this is part of this ongoing expose on trying to recognize that our bodies are a vehicle that we express ourselves with and through. We are, in fact, just consciousness, and we express ourselves through these vehicles. So now, we're going to chat a little more about where is the mind, and continue on with how we can watch and how we can, you know, make metaphors and talk about where the mind is at any given point in time, okay? Now, most people know or think they understand what the mind is. Now, but very few are capable of considering it without seeing it only in personal terms. It's always sort of wrapped around the eye. And you recognize that as you become more and more conscious, you recognize that the eye sort of disappears, okay? So when we travel through what's called samadhi, we move through samadhi into nirvana, we move into what's called the bardo. Bardo is sort of the space in between your birds and deaths. And some would say, as the Douglas Bakers want to say often, we die three times a day every time we sit and meditate. If you have the capacity to meditate and extricate yourself from identification with your bodies, you do experience an aspect of the bardo. And as we further develop our spiritual aspirations to recognize that we aren't our bodies and vessels, we are something much bigger and greater than, every trip through the bardo, okay, that the I that we think we are becomes less and less relevant and also merely dissolves, okay? So many people tend to believe that the mind exists in the brain, and they also hold this notion that just as the brain belongs to the designated vessel that we call the body, so does the mind. So in a bigger sense, really, there's nothing to claim or own, since the mind defies all faculties, because the mind is something more of a receiver rather than as an entity in and of itself. So the pertinent issue here lies with the I, or the notion of the I. Not E-Y-E so much as the I, the letter I, the beingness, that regards everything that arises in awareness to do So from either the self or other, right? So this dualistic perspective cannot aptly apply to the mind, for in the truest sense, mind is a receiver, and it's really just a form of energy. It's a field of highly charged aware energy or consciousness, and it can be extended or moved by mere intention or curiosity. So as a function of that, the mind is not an I, okay? So let's talk about a story and put it in perspective. Okay, you're at a concert, you're sitting down, you're sitting waiting for the musicians, and the musicians are all tuning their instruments. You're listening, you're watching, you're aware of what's going on. And maybe there's a violinist or a pianist coming out to play. And now let's sit and posit the question, where's the mind, okay? Now something is there with you sitting in your seat, looking out through your eyes, perhaps recognizing friends in the concert, okay? So when the concert begins, the conductor comes out, taps on the podium, and all of a sudden the music begins, right? The orchestra starts to dial in, okay? So now you focus your attention or your mind onto the music and onto the musicians, and all of a sudden they begin this performance. Now, if you happen to know the piece they're performing, let's say it's Mozart, or let's say it's Beethoven, or Tchaikovsky, or Liszt, or whatever, all of a sudden you recognize the piece and you can anticipate what's coming. Oh, right, this is a slow piece, this is a fast part, and this is the big part. And so you're listening at this part of the music where it's just lighting you up, and it's just wonderful, and somebody behind you lets forward an enormous sneeze, so that chew, and all of a sudden, holy smokes, right? Now that interrupts your attention and the flow and your anticipation and all this sort of embrace of the music, right? So your mind field now is not just paying attention to the music, it's paying attention to the person behind you, and guess what? It's also probably paying attention to other people around you who've noticed that this guy sneezes and somebody goes, bless you, and all of a sudden, your mind is distracted and focusing on other things. So where is the mind? Okay. Now let's go further. It's being recorded. This concert is being recorded. And so it's also going to be recorded and played in the next night. So move your imagination to the next night and you see yourself at home watching it because you were there, but this time through a television. Okay. So now you've got your little child there, your little boy or girl, and they've never seen a television before. So they come in and you sit them in front of the television. And as you listen to this concert, you sit and look at the child. And it becomes clear to you that the child looks at this little box and thinks that the musicians inside the box are actually in the box. She has no understanding of how a television broadcast goes. And that's to her, they're in the box, happily playing their music. So now we come back to the question, where is the mind? So if you're one who holds the idea that the mind is located in the brain, perhaps we can now identify with the fact that the child looks at the TV thinking that the musicians are in the TV. So now as an adult, you know about television and you know that the music is coming to you through the television, but it's a receiver, okay? So as waves of energy, the broadcast and all that, are received by the television, they're then translated into electrical impulses that produce images on the screen. Now, you know the set is the receiver and not the broadcaster of the programs you watch. Now, the other thing that does come to light, and DB talks about this as well, and that is what we see and oftentimes what we hear are no more than electrical impulses. What we see really isn't what is there so much as the electrical impulses present themselves into the brain. So you take the top of a skull off and you start to electrically stimulate a brain, you'd be amazed at what people have experienced. Just stunning. They can stimulate one aspect of the brain and they say, oh, yeah, I'm seeing a great big truck drive down the street on the wrong side of the street and here's what's going on. I mean, you can stimulate vision by electrically stimulating the brain. So the brain is a receiver set, and it receives the perception that the mind broadcasts. Now, the mind is sort of an aware field of energy. that moves in the direction of attention, curiosity, and or intention. It intercepts and also may be intercepted by other fields of aware energy. So for example, when you think of somebody, I'm sure many of you have this expression or example what played out in your life, when you're very much thinking of somebody and all of a sudden the phone rings and sure enough, there they are on the phone, okay? You're extending your field of awareness to them and your field intercepts their field, often creating powerful, even palpable experiences. Now, it isn't necessarily this is happening in the brain so much. Where it happens is somewhere in the two intersecting fields of awareness. Now, when one field of awareness extends into another field of awareness, as we're thinking very diligently of another, there also arises an opportunity for the dissolution of the I, right? Because all of a sudden another person enters into it, and that other person, your mind wouldn't project on them being you, right? So now we're going to chat a little about other realms of being, disincarnate beings. We're going to chat a little about bardo, which, as we said, is sort of the gap between life and death, or the gap between meditative being and conscious being. So when we have and when we dance around and are conscious and conscientious about the death process, we start to, it becomes quite clear that one's awareness continues not only along this, but it also continues after one is no longer in their physical body. Now, such might seem a natural phenomenon around the time someone actually dies or shortly thereafter. It may not seem so natural at a distance in the future. Now, there's numerous examples of situations where communication between a living person and one who has died has gone on for years, even after the time that the departed loved one may have taken rebirth. So clearly these experiences go significantly beyond the normal experience. But part of the episode of any individual's life, particularly those who are keenly contributory to mankind, their life, even though they've been reborn, is still actively engageable by those who have that level of awareness. Now, this is pretty hard for analytic mind to take on, okay? Contemplative mind or abstract mind sort of gets it, okay? So after one exits a particular life, unless one attains enlightenment or advances through one of the higher aspects of initiation, there's a designated package of energy that retains its relative configuration. So this package has the ability to reflect the personality and the history and the developmental process and wisdom of the life just passed, and can both extend itself into and be extended into by other fields of awareness. So when we have these great beings of the past that have been enormously contributory to mankind, Nikola Tesla comes to mind, but Sir Isaac Newton is in there, Albert Einstein is in there, Paracelsus is in there, Emanuel Swedenborg is in there, William Shakespeare is in there. All of these contributions are accessible in that state of awareness. So try to hold in mind here that even though a given individual body form has left, the work that they came to accomplish may not necessarily have been completed at that point in stage, and this comes to light with Nikola Tesla. Nikola Tesla has done some unbelievably profound work in the energy field and in creating, tapping into the ionosphere in order to access free energy. And this is something that we are retooling, investigating at this very moment, and so are many other people all over the world. But Nikola Tesla's contributions continue to give, even though he died in the early to mid-40s. So, in truth, all of humanity interfacing with the planet at this time and interfacing with that, any great one, whether it's Tesla or Shakespeare or Paracelsus or all of these, they have some sort of part in raising our consciousness, okay? And this is nothing really but a merging of massive fields of consciousness extending together into an expression of at one enlightenment or oneness. Often, even after having made the contributions of a life, like the Tesla, the body may expire, even though the instructional potential continues through time. So for that reason, something obviously must exist to allow such to continue, even without a body. Now, these are pretty complicated matters, and they kind of push the envelope of the boundaries of logic and understanding. But those boundaries, as you might appreciate, are no more than collective projections, and they're no more real than the projections in and of themselves. Okay. Now, as we sort of move through this topic, the simplistic terminology probably can't even touch the profound miracle of consciousness. And this is where we're undertaking to turn the lights on a bit. Whether we speak of mind or awareness or consciousness or the light of the infinite, we speak of the same thing, just different applications and potential applications. Now, in the bardo, and as I said before, the bardo happens between lives. It happens during meditation when you can extricate yourself from your identification with your bodies. And it also happens as you are about to be reborn from disincarnate to incarnate. Okay. So in the bardo, the mind and its I-ness is unraveled by this continual manifestation of karmic projections. So the mind is a container for awareness. So when the container dissolves, your mental body does dissolve, your physical body dissolves, obviously, and your etheric and your emotional body and your mental body, and these dissolve. So when this container dissolves, this awareness is released in somewhat the same fashion that the mind is released from its anchoring point in the physical point, in the physical body at the point of death. In each case, it's quite a rapid expansion that demonstrates something about the true nature of awareness. Hopefully, trustfully, as we move further and further towards our spiritual evolution at profounder and profounder levels. So when awareness is released from the confines of the mind, all kinds of potentials arise. And one being that of the extension into the infinite flow of radiant energy, which we call love. The Beatles, All You Need Is Love, the radiant aura and energy of Amun Ra, who is the sun and is the energy, the Retu energy of love and wisdom. Now it's beinglessness and it's endless. Okay, this is the divine function of awareness, of consciousness. Now awareness at all levels, even at the most condensed or constricted levels, it's continually being prompted to expand. Now it's often limited, if not most often limited, by the body mind. This natural expression is confined or trapped. Now, when consciousness is freed from this trap, the confines of body and of mind, the potential of the unification with the infinite is at its highest probability. Now, Alan Watts talks about death is like taking yourself, like removing a tight-fitting shoe, well-worn, tight-fitting shoe. I mean, you get to extricate yourself from this package, okay? Now, for many, the thought of facing death or facing the bardo seems quite frightening and often too intense to bear because we've been trained from time immemorial to fear death, to view death as something that is something fearful. Now, one of the things that Martin Scorsese did in this wonderful episode of his expose or his documentary on George Harrison is he talked about George after George went to India. He met Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, and one of the things that continued throughout George's life through his diligence is that he was constantly getting ready to die. In his 30s, in his 20s, in his 30s, he was getting ready to die. Now, he didn't die until he was in his 60s, but he was getting ready to die. And Douglas Baker talks about this a lot, too. He was stand up and die right. And there was sort of, for an individual who moved through the war had a profound effect on him. But there was this preparedness to die, to enter into the bardo, okay? So this dying is frightful. As those of you who've experienced people who have died, some of them are very afraid. Some of them just shut down because they get so overwhelmed. And some open to the opportunity and open to the experience. Because as we've said always, and as we will continue to say, there is no such thing as death. What there is the extrication from your packages from time to time. And as we become more aware, you become aware, even while you're in your packages, that you are not your packages, your vessels that we just spoke of. So the potential to slip into that natural state merged with the infinite or the divine is unequaled in the body-mind package. Now, that being said, it also remains true that most individuals who actualize their enlightenment do so while they're in their physical form. This is called the ascension process. So to the awakened bardo traveler, it's the very experience of the bardo that often propels one into a life in which one finds profound awakening or self-realization. So Yogananda talked about, and in fact he created the Self-Realization Fellowship. Simply stated, there is no experience in the body-mind state that reveals the true nature of mind so profoundly as does this bardo journey, the death experience. Now, the bardo journey doesn't need to be death, as we've said. So as the mind unravels in this bardo, streams of light, aware light, are revealed to the one who is awake enough to recognize it. Now, these streams of light are emitted by the divine, by the infinite, through one's liberated mind. When all these karmic projections that we've been chatting about for weeks now are transcended or dissolved. Now, these streams of aware light are encoded with this very special formula, not only for personal enlightenment, but for the planetary enlightenment as well. The work we do to wake up contributes to the planet. It's very important to remember that and recognize that. We are the hands and feet of the hierarchy that's doing everything it can to wake up the planet. Indeed, hidden within these experiences, these bardo experiences that seem so frightening to some, is direct access to this mathematical explanation or formula, that the transformation that we all seek. Indeed, this transformation that the entire cosmos seeks. Now, this formula is not understandable to the linear or analytic or intellect. However, when awareness released from the mind encounters this formula within the streaming love of the infinite, a rapid expansion occurs, releasing this infinite light of consciousness from awareness. As can be seen, this creative pattern evolves along a divine continuum. Now, as mind is released from the body container at the point of death, at the point of bardo, as awareness is released from the container of mind in the bardo, so infinite light is released from the container of awareness in a flash of exuberant union with the cosmos. This brings us back to the quote that Arthur said to Parsifal when he gave him the chalice, and he said, oh, and he drinks from the chalice, and he said, never did I know how empty was my soul till it was filled to overflowing. This is when Yogananda, in his book Autobiography of a Yogi, talks about experiencing the great mansion of spirit. Now, if we're caught in the delusion of fear or asleep in this trance of our karmic projections, this bardo journey may not so much be enlightening, it might be endarkening. Okay? So perhaps it's an unconscious memory from another death experience or another bardo journey, but within this creative core, there may exist a reservoir of frightening experiences that cover up the experience that you want to aspire to. Now, your past experiences create projections. These projections are karmically inclined, and consequently, we play next best the hand that says, awaken, see through the projections, extricate yourself from that. And this is in taming the mind. The best advice any teacher can give you is taming the mind, stepping into the light, or as Buddha said, wake up. What could be more important than learning to cut through all of these projections that we've been chatting about for weeks now? Viable mind training, developing specific skills, concentration, strong focus, challenging projections as they arise in the mind, cultivating the qualities of enlightened mind, and moving with the call of heightened awareness to continually expand. Now, we talk about the three legs of the stool that are necessary in order for us to carry on our journey, and they are study, meditation, and service. We will and have done shows on that, but let us further remember those, okay, to the extent possible. Okay, it's useful to draw parallels between the experiences that we're just chatting about and the experiences that we undergo in daily life. The practice is helpful since it's preparatory work for when one actually enters the bardo, whether it's in meditation or whether it's in depth. So just contemplating the bardo is helpful. Now, there is a formula for enlightenment, and few have stumbled upon it without a preceding heightened bardo experience, since full comprehension of the formula cannot be contained by or placed within the normal configuration of mind. Since the planets, the cosmos, the alignment, and the enlightenment, it's the time of revelation, and it is the goal of the Aquarian Age. The movement into this new age opens both individual and collective experiences of the psyche to profoundly new realization levels. This is a time when humanity must rise to new levels of trustworthiness and responsibility in order to use this potential to increase and open our consciousness. As they become more available, mind must dissolve into consciousness, for mind is too small a container for this expansive provision of beingness that's possible when consciousness is unfettered, and that's called union with the divine. Now, the practice referred to that we're talking about is that of contemplating and meditating upon the formula for enlightenment. Now, clearly, this formula should not be approached as some cosmic secret available to few. Rather, it would be approached as a tremendously powerful spiritual realization available to all who have eyes to see and ears to hear, and all who can come to understand it, or at least be open to it. As the critical mass of the planet is approached, and as we who choose to turn the lights on, the light bearers, we shift in consciousness, all of a sudden the potential and the possibilities that were not previously possible due to the old paradigm thinking open up. And while this same force can produce enormous amounts of chaos in the world, the chaos, like those encountered in the bardo, may be hiding something rare, wonderful, and utterly transcendent. So this is the opportunity to rise to the occasion, to wake up to the light, and become that glorient, that radiant, glorified you that you are always destined to be. So as the mind dissolves into consciousness, it begins to reveal the true nature of everything to all who find union with the beingness. Many revelations are likely to emerge in this field of awareness, and these will create and support and sustain and ultimately reclaim each piece of consciousness that was formerly encapsulated or fettered or contained by the mind. It's under this glorient, radiant field that all efforts to break the bonds of suffering are dedicated. As this profound coalescing of light creates a greater awakening among the minds of humanity, let's have every one designated being of light receive and give forth this brilliant radiance it was meant to reflect. And this is part of, may light establish itself back on earth. So too, the discovery of the profound within the mundane, the infinite within the finite, the sacred within the profane, the formula for enlightenment is hereby offered for the liberation of all sentient beings. May all beings everywhere receive countless best blessings from the encounter of this great mystery. And this great mystery is 1 + 1 = 0. Ladies and gentlemen, let us noodle on that. I will leave that to you and for you. We've gone through a wee stage of how to extricate ourselves from over-identification with our vessels. We are bigger than our vessels. We are profoundly more expansive, and all we really are is consciousness. I thank you for your attention. I am infinitely grateful for being of some use to some of you, and I am even more grateful for the opportunity to be of service. This has been episode 12 of The Art and Science of Self-Discovery. We will continue next week with other topic matters and other subject matters that further embrace our awakening. Thank you for your attention. Thank you for allowing us to be of service. And I will see you or speak with you next week. This is Jeff Dunphy. It's Friday, May 20th, 2016.